Oh, we're going.
It's that time.
It's that time. Well,
every Thursday now.
Every Thursday.
You know, I got some complaints from regular listeners. Yeah. They still hadn't grokked that we released this on Thursday instead of Friday.
I never know what day it is anymore.
Well, it's Thursday.
It's Thursday.
We're all listening.
That's when this comes out. It's the day that follows Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some hitting you with some facts.
Thursday. You know?
What is it?
Thor's Day, I think, is what the day is called, named after, Norse gods.
If we don't
apologies to Pete Hedsex.
If we don't say some politically relevant words real fast, we're going to be nuked in the algorithm. So
politics.
Trump.
Fauci. Zoran Mamdani.
Those are good ones. Hot babes. Keep watching. Something.
Suicide prevention.
Stop saying that word.
I'm sorry.
Do you have to say that word
in
the first 30 seconds of the podcast every time?
You're right.
Prevention doesn't help.
We'll bleep it.
No more prevention.
All right.
Donald Trump, may have heard of him, president of the United States, has proposed last night. I was watching. Mm-hmm. There was a midterm. We're doing midterm conventions now.
Yeah. Although it's been pointed out to me, this is very much not a convention of any sort.
No.
There's no convening. There's nothing.
There's no convenience for Robbie, a morning news show host, having to stay up to 11:30 for an extra hour and 45 minutes while Trump's rambling on. Yeah, I'm not trying to be a hater for the Trump supporters out there. It's just like this whole thing could have been an email.
Yeah.
Well, is this enjoyable? Do you enjoy this? I can't comprehend the person who enjoyed hearing Trump say, do his whole shtick again, culminating in his only new idea. There was nothing new in any of this. The only new idea, what will they do if they hold on to power? Like, what is their plan?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing he expressed that was a new idea was that they will set, he said, will pay a dividend to every American of $5,000 if they hold the House and the Senate.
Yeah, just literal bribery.
Ludicrous. Well, you know what? And then I had an argument, though, with Niall and Lindsay, and Reem got in on it because Reem was helping me, our colleague here at Reason.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that it's...
A lot of outside friends.
I don't know. What?
Said a lot of outside friends.
Yeah. Everybody was there. Where were you?
Yeah. Once again.
Yeah.
Okay. But go on. Sorry. I'm not hurt.
I'm sure your invitation just got, lost. What's your name again?
Wow. You'll have to look in the show notes. we'll put it in the show notes.
Uh-oh. I interviewed Stephanie Slade on Rising this morning
right,
to promote her book,
mm-hmm.
which I was like 98% sure it was called Fusionism.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's called that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I got it right. So
Liberty, Virtue, and the
all that good stuff. It's a great book. Everybody should get it.
Yep.
And we had a great conversation about it on Rising, and she's been talking about it all over the place, getting good reviews. Anyway, $5,000 to every American. It's not a bribe any more so than anything politicians do is a bribe.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And in fact, you could even say it is less immoral to promise every American a payout if you win, maybe, than it is to promise, if I win, I will steer just specific government money to whatever extent possible to the people who voted me into office. You know, like if I'm gonna raise taxes on the wealthy who I'll give to my opponents and add new benefits for this constituency group or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look the other way on some fraud that you people are committing. You know, that's what I'm doing if you're electing me.
Yeah.
This is for all Americans. That doesn't make it a good idea. It is certainly not a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm just not, bribery was what first came to mind for everyone. And I'm like, how is this different?
Yeah, sure. I completely agree with that. There is an interesting, did you ever watch the show I, Claudius on BBC, based off the Robert Graves novel about like Roman emperors or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a conversation between two of Claudius's like advisors, right? And one is opposing building a new port because it'll mean cheaper grain is getting into the city and he has interests in the grain trade and so he would lose money. And the one is like, that's really corrupt. And he's like, really? Because if we build the port, then everyone benefits from the government policy, whereas right now I'm the one benefiting from it. And so it's less selfish, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's I, Claudius. I should check that out.
It is really good. It does it's excellent. Highly recommend it. It's got some great British, Shakespearean actors. Mm-hmm. My one little criticism is it's very, you know, it's theatrical. And so it's a lot of kind of melodramatic performances, particularly at some point in every episode, a woman just starts shrieking. And that's a little tough to bear.
Oh, there's women in it.
Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah,
That in the Rome television show that was on HBO, which is a great television show. My favorite part of it is the like announcer guy who's sponsored town. by True Roman Bread for True Romans, right. Who's like doing his announcements, and it's like advertising back. It's so great.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of bread and circuses, it's $5,000. Yeah, it is interesting, the kind of like speed running of populism here, right? I guess you could make the argument that. Okay, you can understand the corrupt potential of just giving out crony grants to, you know, a small select special interest, right?
Right.
And I think that's actually something that really screwed over Democrats under Joe Biden. He comes in, passes the American Rescue Plan, which is like this gigantic, huge amount of spending. But all the money goes to just like Stacey Abrams' climate, you know, groups.
Yes.
And so like, you know, you don't get
corrupt
the check in
NGOs,
the mail.
Yeah.
And still spikes inflation, right? So this is at least a little more honest about what it's trying to do. Vote for me and I will give you all money.
Mm-hmm.
The problems are you are in fact spending much more money.
Yeah.
where is the money going to come from?
Well, right. He didn't even say where the money is coming
from. Yeah, it's a dividend. What off what?
A dividend of what? Right.
What does the U.S. government
own? It would
cost
$1 trillion that we don't have $1 trillion to just give to people.
Yeah.
Or $1 trillion in debt.
I mean, talk about inflation, right? I mean, come on.
Well, yeah. You've heard of the Inflation Reduction Act. This is the Inflation Reduction Act. Because it would be massively inflationary. We've tried just giving money to people or just, that's what happens. You get inflation. Yeah. Now, I'm happy to return to people their tax dollars. But the problem is a lot of people didn't even put in $5,000, and a lot of people put in a lot more than $5,000. So this isn't just giving back to the people what they paid into the system, which I'm all in favor of.
Giving back to who?
To the people. Gotham is yours. Do as you please.
Very good.
So they're not. Congress is never going to approve such a scheme.
We can't. We literally can't afford. At any point.
It's not. So it's just a lie. Is probably the biggest criticism of it.
But I guess that's kind of bad too, right?
Yeah.
Just like the hucksterism of it all. I mean, I think that's why people react negatively to it.
And why doesn't he give everyone Americans from his like crypto profits or whatever? I mean, he doesn't.
Well,
not enough of it.
Those are private. That's private money. Yeah.
And I don't really care that they're all getting rich off crypto, because you have to agree to participate in that.
Yeah, there is.
That's different than like the steering of government contracts toward allies, which is very bad.
There is a little bit of like a fool in his money aspect to all these meme coins, right? Like, I'm sure it meets some legal definition of fraud, probably. I don't know. But
if this be fraud.
That being said, like, what do you.
A man trying to earn a living and you're going to come in here say it's fraud.
Yeah.
What next?
Well, it's just like, if you're buying laptop coin, like Hunter Biden's new meme coin or whatever, like, what are you thinking? What do you think you're going to get out of this?
And you're seeking my sympathy if you lose money in this venture?
Yeah.
My lack of sympathy for you is, it's deafening.
Yeah.
How much I don't care if you lose money, if you put Trump or Biden.
Yeah.
Who's the person who does that?
Yeah. I mean.
And then you're going to come crying to me for a bailout?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
cause it's like,
sorry. No, thanks.
Fraud, at least, it's like, okay, I'm going to sell you, I'm going to take your money and I'm going to invest it in the factory and then we're going to pay out a certain return. And there's a little bit of risk, but you're telling me you're going to do this one thing. And then you just take the money and, buy cocaine and strippers.
Right.
That's okay. I was lied to.
Right.
This is a little more like
Hunter Biden, a man well known for spending a lot of money on cocaine and strippers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like with Elizabeth Holmes, she obviously, we have that new documentary coming out, which looks like a massive cringe fest. I say that in a good way. But it's like, she goes to prison for her fraud. Fair enough. She broke the laws. Pretty egregious fraud.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's like, well, if we're focused on deterrence here, who would give Elizabeth Holmes money after this? And if you did, that seems like it's on you, right?
Right. And the idea that the government exists to prevent you from the consequences of your own bad decisions or investments is that's Elizabeth Warren's central creed.
Yeah.
It is progressive. It is not libertarian.
Yeah.
It's almost – it's anti-libertarian, really.
Yeah.
Right? We don't – I don't want the government to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a line to draw between taking insane risks, right, and you just kind of eat the consequences of that, and people lying to you about what they're going to do with your money.
Well, people want the upside of risk without any of the consequences of it.
Oh, that would be – yeah. Can we have that? That would be great. I would love that.
I just want to go to these people sometimes and be like – you chose this.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
My risk tolerance in investment is so low. A financial advisor I once worked with said I had the lowest risk tolerance of anyone he had ever worked with.
Wow.
Ever. Because I'm like, I earned that money. I don't need there to be more money than the money I earned. I just don't. I just want to keep more of the money I earned.
Well,
bury it in the backyard. Get the shovel.
But your financial advisor was Hunter Biden. He's like, come on, let's fucking go.
Laptop coin, bitches. So Trump is, it's fizzling. It's
well, then you have the other, you have J.D. Vance's other proposal of we're going to start subsidizing at-home moms.
We'll pay people not to work.
Yeah, which is funny because
this is a more complicated idea.
It is a little more complicated, and it's also a little bit of the, you know, the sexual harassment comment where the top panel is the unattractive guy being like, hey, you look good today, Susie. It's like HR, and then it's the attractive guy like, hey, looking good, Susie.
Yes, I love that one. Yes, I love that one.
People, that's how I kind of feel about the J.D. Vance proposal vis-a-vis Joe Biden's, which a lot of Republicans supported, extending the earned child tax credit or whatever, where that wasn't, it had no, like, there was no work requirements or anything to it. It wasn't like explicitly subsidizing at-home moms or whatever, right? But it has the effect of encouraging women with children to stay out of the workforce, which is why a lot of conservatives opposed it. Not all of them, but some of them.
Right.
This is just more explicitly doing that,
right,
and therefore people are flipping out. It's similar to, bring back to J.D. Vance, during, I think it was the 2024 election, one of his comments on a podcast suggesting that we tax childless people more got brought up, and everyone's like, oh, that's ridiculous. And this is right at the time we're arguing about expanding the child tax credit, which, like, these are indistinguishable policies, right?
Exactly.
But just, like, saying it a little more explicitly means people get queasy about it. And so it's similar, I guess, to the Trump $5,000 thing, right? It's like he's just stripping away all the, like, fig leaf of public policy rationale for taking money from one person and giving it to another. And when he does that very transactionally, is like, I'll give you $5,000 if you vote for me, then people get turned off. But if you're just like a social democrat who's like, vote for me and we will rearrange trillions of dollars in the economy to your benefit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's the Trump thing is different again because it's not just I'm going to give you $5,000 if you vote for me. If I win, I'm going to give everyone $5,000.
Yeah.
This is trying to shape public policy, right? There's a group of conservatives, Vance among them, who think so many women being in the workforce is a bad idea because it's not conducive to good to their what they want the family to look like, right? Mm-hmm. They want mom stay home, raise the kids. And this used to not be so much of an issue. Mom just would stay home and raise the kids generations past because mom couldn't earn that much money out as a worker anyway. Mm-hmm. So if she went to work, then you have to pay someone for childcare. What she was going to earn and what the childcare costs were not so radically different. There was no point. Mm-hmm. She might as well stay home with the kids.
Yeah.
Now, over time, women have broad equality and mom can go out and
broad
earn.
Broad equality? Is that a pun? Sorry, go on.
Thanks for that. That was really helpful.
I'm sorry. No, go on. You were saying some smart things.
I was saying some smart things. So now women can earn a lot of money. And so the cost of choosing to stay at home is a lot of lost income.
Yeah.
So, but like conservatives don't like that. They think it's better for the kids if mom stays home with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to put the thumb on the scale a little bit to make it more likely mom will do that.
Yeah.
I can't get past – I mean, look, I get how some of our incentives in society, it seemed to be, are making it – people are having fewer kids. It's more – there's not all, like, things are getting cheaper over time, but not everything is getting cheaper.
Labor is not.
Right. Labor's not. Labor-intensive services are not getting less expensive. Mm-hmm. So childcare is expensive. Education is expensive. Houses are expensive in places where there's economic opportunity. There's a limited supply. So things have gotten, I think, more cost-intensive for people starting out, starting with families, and less cost-intensive for, you know, we subsidize every aspect of your elderly life,
yeah.
And or people who bought houses forever ago. You know, a lot of consumer electronics and everything getting cheaper over time. So much, you can have access to so much more, but that's cold comfort to people who are like, how are we going to afford childcare in New York City?
Yeah.
So, like, I get the idea that the government has to do something. I mean, the government has done so much to steer benefits to everyone but this group of people that it does seem to be having some effect on the number of children or people delaying having children or the number of children people have, and that that's socially undesirable. I think those are valid phenomenons to recognize.
Yeah.
At the same time, I just don't. I don't think the government should pay people not to work. Seems
yeah, for sure. Yeah, so a couple of thoughts. So A, you know, as Elizabeth Nolan Brown has written here, like many of these types of policies to incentivize people through fiscal incentives to have more children
just don't
really work.
Don't work.
Yeah, and they, you know, probably one of the reasons they don't work is because just the opportunity cost is still always going to be higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of you're going to make more money if you go to work, and people want more money as opposed to, you know, more kids. At some point, they're going to make that trade off, and they're increasingly making that trade off towards more money, fewer kids. And then, secondly, as you mentioned, like not really as the, you know, beyond I think any, I mean, homes, housing costs obviously have a lot to do with government policy, but the fact that just wages keep going up isn't really a result of government policy. It's just the fact that the economy keeps getting richer, people keep getting more productive, right? So it's just like every year goes by, it's going to cost a little more to hire someone, right? And there's nothing, there's only so much you can do about that. I mean, the most obvious solution, although, you know, a temporary one, is to have more immigration, because then you bring in lower
income
people.
Which is, conservatives hate that idea,
okay,
although
so we're
that
not
is
do that.
The, right, that's the answer. That is absolutely the answer.
That's that. Yeah, and I mean,
yeah, I mean, that is the answer.
You imagine at a certain point, even that's not going to work in the long term, because then the immigrants get here and then their wages go up a lot too, right?
Right.
So,
but there is a pool of people
who
will work very cheaply in all of these things we're talking about, in childcare, and they can be, and childcare, I always say, people don't like when I say this, but childcare does not require a high degree of credentialed behavior or credentialed expertise or education.
Yeah.
Anyone, women, older women who just want to earn a couple more bucks or something, immigrant women who have a kind soul and warmth to them can do it perfectly fine. Like, I'm not saying it requires no skill or anything, but it doesn't require credentialed skill.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend time in a classroom or being trained. Some people are not good at it because they don't care about kids or like kids or have natural warmth to them. But a lot of people do. A lot of people do and are perfectly good at it. And we should let more of them come to the country and lower their childcare costs. Because conservatives hate that explanation, even though that is the answer.
That is the solution.
Like, that just is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also like, this is not – so, A, this policy here, I mean – I guess it will make the economy less productive, in that you are going to have to increase taxes on people who work and make a living to subsidize people who are not working, right? But then what's in the shuffle here? So I guess you reduce the returns to working, right? But then on the flip side, you're giving everyone less money, and so if the problem is people are not having children because of, you know, cost problems, then this will make that worse.
I mean, when I see those little lines of kids, you know, the kids are being walked. Like little small cute animals, you know, they're all on the rope, holding onto the rope. They're being walked around.
Mm-hmm.
Who's walking them every time? Abuelita.
Yeah.
Every single time. This is a natural job for Abuelita,
okay.
And we should just allow, just like legalize it, people. I know the answer is staring you in the face.
Yeah.
Conservatives, you know, won't let us have access to nice, affordable things like that, because it makes them feel bad that real Americans need to do those jobs. Okay, real Americans are just bankrupt you to do that job, but fine. Okay, well, just stay home and do it with your own kid. Okay, fine. Stay home. Fine. I don't know. I'm going to be making conservatives very happy because I'm about ready to have kids, you know, in the next couple of years. So they'll be very thrilled that it's okay. time for me to start a
family. You got to sort of thaw out your eggs.
Yeah. I'll make them happy.
It is funny just like how political issues never go away. Like I mentioned on the pod before, reading this big history of the French Revolution, getting towards the end. I think it's going to work out.
Is this Napoleon character? Like the season six cast Napoleon?
He's not quite on the scene yet. Yeah. We're still, the king is still on his throne, but it's getting pretty wobbly.
Oh,
yeah.
Louis.
Yeah, R.I.P. One of the big issues, you know, kind of like proto-revolutionary issues was breastfeeding, right? And this was actually kind of like a mom goes to work issue, is the reformers, they wanted to encourage through education and subsidization women staying home and breastfeeding, but peasant women, they would give their children to a wet nurse because they had to be out in the fields to go work. Right. They had to go out and make a living. And they were going out and making a living because wages were going up in France at the time. Yeah. This is one of the kind of like hot new takes on the revolution. It's like France is actually getting much richer in the lead up to the revolution.
But when you get a little bit richer, you get some revolution.
Yeah, because people are like, ooh, I could go for a little bit of that money too. If everyone's just poor all the time.
We're both stuck in France right now because I'm reading The Three Musketeers.
Yeah, how's that
going?
And
it's good.
Did you see the seeds of revolution planted?
The seeds of revolution, yeah. It's just a bunch of dudes walking around challenging each other to fights all the time and then fighting and getting like grievously injured. And like that's just what they do for fun.
Yeah.
And it's very toxic.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But
knife fights, man. That's what they say is, you know, the loser of the knife fight bleeds out on the street and the winner in the ambulance. So be careful.
Well, yeah, they use those, you know.
Rapiers.
Those pointy little swords.
Sorry,
those...
will YouTube censor me for saying
the pokey one. Rapiers. That's... Yeah, yeah. Well, they call aren't they called foils when you...
Oh, okay, sure.
In dueling.
Yeah.
In fencing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they use it, but they're breaking all the time and...
Yeah. Yeah, when did they decide in the 1600s? Like, what if we just made the swords really thin and bendy?
Well, I guess because they're trying not to kill each other. Mm. Really?
Okay.
And I was thinking they're musketeers because they use guns, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah.
I thought that
is what a musketeer would be.
Maybe
it's just a generic term for soldier at the time.
The guns haven't come into... And then I'm trying to be like... I swear I'm smarter than this. I'm like, are there guns yet? There's cannons. There's
1600s?
Yeah.
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 I mean, they're like ludicrous, you know.
They explode when you look at them.
Yeah, you got to like put it on a stand and like light a match and everything.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's the schemings of Cardinal Richelieu. I mean, it's not totally historical, right? Because Cardinal Richelieu was not working against the King of France to put the British...
right.
He was working against the church is what he was... what I always found interesting, and the guy with Cardinal in his title is the one most determined to undermine the interests of the Catholic Church in favor of the interests of his nation.
This is actually a very,
very interesting.
Yeah, 100%. In fact, Henry Kissinger in his book Diplomacy, he begins talking about Cardinal Richelieu as like an OG realist because he abandons all sorts of like, you know, cross-national idealism about protecting, you know, furthering Catholicism in the 30 Years' War. He's like, okay, what's going on?
Right, they're just watching that happen.
Yeah.
Doing nothing to aid the Catholic cause and, in fact, undermining it to whatever extent possible so they can weaken the Habsburg, Empire, which has encircled them.
Right.
And they're just, like, watching this madness and chaos and violence happen to their rival and just going... Ooh. It's pretty great.
It's crazy how bad the French episcopacy was for like the actual church in France. Cause in this French Revolution book, I just got through the part where like one of the first things that like really sends the revolution off the rails or just creates this like deep fissure that will just grow wider and wider as the revolution goes on is, you know, the National Assembly gets in there and they're like, okay, we got to fix this budget problem. And Talleyrand, bishop, is like, ooh, what if we, but a very cynical and atheistic bishop is like, what if we just steal all of the church's land? And make all the priests swear an oath to the nation so that they will basically just be public servants of the country as opposed to the church itself. And this obviously pisses off a lot of the clergy who had up until that point been, you know, pretty fanatic supporters of the revolution because they were mad about not getting, you know, poor, you know, rural curates, not getting, you know, tithes or whatever. But yeah, this is another hot take about the revolution is that, like, you know, it's, you know, France is like the most Catholic power or whatever, but really the authority of the church had been subsumed by the state, yeah. right? And the church had become an arm of the state, which is good.
Paris argument. Is worth a mass. Going to the original, was that Henry of Navarre, Henry the IV, I think, saying, no, I'll be Catholic so I can be king.
Yeah.
that's how unimportant it was.
right. And I think this is actually a good lesson for our integralist listeners, right? People who want a Catholic monarchy or whatever. So if the king's Catholic, the king's going to start bossing around the church.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not so good.
It's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of in financial endeavors that are rife with scheming and immorality.
Yes, my liege. Continue.
Fuck. Car insurance.
Oh, no.
Oh,
what? Oh, great. Here we go. Marjorie Taylor Greene.
God, I have been dealing with these people now for like over 3 months. I had some damage to my car. My fault. Not pretending it's not my fault. I've had it in the shop. You know, you think, I don't have time. I don't want to be on the phone with these people all day. Okay. Whatever it is, they're going to raise my insurance premiums. Fine. The insurance company pays the repair shop, and I just tell me when it's done, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I thought it would work. But for some reason, the insurance company decided to pay me, so then I have to give the money to the repair shop.
Yeah.
And then they're haggling the repair shop and the insurance company over how much it actually costs to fix this relatively minor damage to the car door, whether it costs $80 million or $9 trillion, right? They're going back and forth on that. I don't believe any of these costs are real.
Yeah.
These are not market prices being set for anything. Whatever. Then I finally thought it was done. And I can see in the insurance company, like, they're going back and forth. Like, we say this extra thing costs $2,500. Like, no, we think it's $2,700. And they haggle it out and then fine. Then the money gets – so revised estimates. More money has been sent first to me. Now they're actually just sending it to the repair shop. Thank goodness. So I was like, finally. It's been 3 months. Finally, I got an email from the repair shop saying – your car's ready to be picked up. I said, okay, great.
Ending.
And by the way, when you come, you'll owe $4,000. And I wrote back, no, I don't. What are you talking about? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
If I owe something, tell the insurance company, right?
Yeah.
What do you have car insurance for?
And
they said, okay, well, I had to pay. One of the payments got sent to me. I said, okay, yeah, it got sent to me. So, okay, I owe you that payment. But what about the rest of it? And they're like, yeah, well, we sent that to the insurance company. They haven't given it to us yet. I'm like, okay. So then it's not done, and it's not ready to be picked up. So I had to go talk to the insurance company, and they're like, oh, yeah, that money is still being processed. We'll get it to the repair shop. I'm like, okay, well, then why did you bother me if this process isn't done yet?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, if you bother the insurance company to give you the money sooner, then you could come get the car. I'm like, what, sooner than in the next 2 days? Where is all this extra time people have? I got to record a podcast for every hour of the next solidly.
It's very frustrating.
Frustrating.
It sounds like it's working out.
But I don't have time. And I don't have time, and Americans don't have time, God damn it, to be on the phone. Who wants to spend their afternoon on the phone?
Yeah.
Like, a lost afternoon of productivity is worth a certain amount of money.
Yeah. That's why I became a journalist. I don't have to call anyone.
I mean, I'd rather just pay it rather than $4,000 is a lot.
Yeah.
But if I have to spend every afternoon on the phone for the next week to get this sorted out, then I'd rather just pay the goddamn money.
Yeah.
Hate this.
It is.
I hate
this is a
cartel-like behavior.
This is a very frustrating aspect of insurance. Is for all its many benefits, it's good that we have insurance, although the kinds of insurance we have now. So
it drains our time.
Obviously. It drains our time.
Time is the most precious resource of all.
Yeah.
We can make more money. We can't have more time.
I would say the nation's children are our most precious resource. But any sorts of insurance dispute, it becomes, there's the provider of the services that are insured against, and there's the insurer, and they need to be talking to each other.
Right.
But really, it's you talking to both ends. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the whole problem.
It's very frustrating. Yeah.
This is what I hope AI comes in and cleans all these people out.
Yeah.
I hope it reduces insurance to there's just one guy in a computer.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That they could work. They'll know the actual cost of the thing and they can deal with all of
it. No, but you know what's going to happen.
What's going to happen? Law is going to prevent that is what's going to happen.
Well, sure. Part of that. Then also the repair shop's going to be like, oh, you know, you owe us $4,000. And so you're going to go to the insurance company and it's going to be some AI chatbot being like, that does sound very frustrating.
Yeah. Well, but right now it's talking to a... It's talking to a press one for more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the actual robot, the robot that knows that has like a brain inside its robot head, would it will be preferable to press one for Inglés.
Mm, yeah,
I'm sorry, see, I didn't understand that. The fake robot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. It's tough business. Tough business. Yeah, I had an insurance thing. It's interesting. This both highlights the benefits and
I'm sorry
severe.
I didn't get that.
Could you press... I'm pressing one
Oh, you pressed it too fast.
Ah,
I have to repeat my options. What is your insurance related issue?
Yeah, it's this one highlights you talked about the flaws of car insurance. This one highlights the pros and cons of our own ludicrous medical insurance program, where I'm trying to get this specialty medication for, I'm fine, it's like a skin thing.
Yeah.
And it's great. Fantastic pharmaceutical.
Is it because I keep pouring fire ants into your bedroom at night when you're in the middle of the night when you're not
aware
that
I'm there?
Yeah,
and the creams, you know, the ants have developed resistance to the balm I put on it. And so now I need a deeper chemical solution here.
I poured sand in all the cream jars too, so that's probably not helping.
Yeah, it's just tearing out my skin.
Yeah.
Starting to look like you a couple weeks ago.
I can't have you looking better than me.
Right. That's why you're texting me at 2 a.m. Have another drink.
Yeah, well, it's I feed you in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. I show up with a bucket of ice cream.
Melted ice cream. Yeah, I
pour it down your throat. Yeah. If you stroke the throat like this, it mimics the swallowing
motion. I'm getting waterboarded with a melted ice cream.
Yeah, but continue.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's because of all these, you know, horrible lesions you've inflicted on me.
Yeah.
There's because of our amazing pharmaceutical system, they've developed a cure effectively, right? But it's very expensive, right?
Hmm.
Insurance will cover it, but then there's a gigantic copay, right? But so now, in order to get this medication, I have to go through like this mystery maze of third parties who will basically like pay my copay to the pharmacy. And so that I will get the medication so that the insurance company pays them way more money, right? In some states, for some stuff, this is actually illegal. It's considered like a kickback scheme.
Mm.
This is not. But it's like...
But are the fire ants getting their cut?
Yes. Okay. I think so.
Okay, well, then that's fine.
But, you know, like the upside is this medication exists, right? Because there's a fabulous financial return to creating it, right? Whereas if we were in the UK... They'd be like, what? You know?
Bob's your uncle.
Yeah. We're looking at our, you know, horrible fiscal situation and deciding you can actually suffer the ant bites a little longer, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to kill yourself? Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
My God.
But the
downside by fire ant.
Yeah.
That's
the downside is like at a certain point, I am just a body being circled by all these intermediaries who I have no idea what they really do, but are haggling over the price that it takes to fix these fire ants.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's no good. AI could fix a lot of this, I think.
Maybe. Well, it's going to kill us all.
Maybe it'll kill us all.
Do you want to talk about
big topic I wanted to get to. So everybody's been screaming about this, setting their hair on fire. The color of fire ants in the last 2 days. I know.
I'm traumatized.
Yeah, that's because I keep giving them to you. Over this Anthropic guy, he'd only been at the company for like 2 months, but I guess he worked at OpenAI before that. He quits saying they're not taking the risks, the existential threat to humanity, seriously enough. It got quickly, this is a tweet that went like super omega viral, and then he was also like on every cable news channel, and there was an op-ed. There was a lot of quick piling on that has tech people screaming that it's a psyop when it's like just, well, doom and gloom. Like if it bleeds, it leads.
Everything's
like
a psyop.
All right. This term is getting overused now. The media loves negative stories about everything, including technology, because A, they're doomerists themselves. They're inclined toward I'm talking about the mainstream media very broadly. They're inclined to a someone should do something model of behavior, right? There is a problem. the government should act to stop it, is like the news is things that happen, not things that don't happen. News is not most sidewalks in the city are in very orderly fashion and no one has fallen. News is shocking story. Old woman tripped on sidewalk. Where has the sidewalk commission been? They've not been on top of this, right? There's a bias toward action that's just inherent to news coverage.
Yeah.
And this is a topic that has people worried because it's cool and sci-fi and Skynet and The Matrix and everything. So there's nothing necessarily in – it's not – describing it as inauthentic is a little – is not quite the right fit. Like it is – it's coordinated because they have a sincere interest in coordinating coverage of something that they think A is bad and B is their business model to outrage people about. In the same way that the Facebook files, which were the nothingest nothing burger that has ever existed, this internal reports that Facebook and Instagram had about harms to some users that was whistleblower Francis Haugen. They're making a movie about it now where Jeremy Strong is playing Zuckerberg.
Oh,
it looks like
the
worst movie.
Terrible.
It's going to be the worst movie ever made. But that quickly got amplified and it's not inauthentic. It is coordinated, but it's coordinated because they have there are forces that don't like tech and don't like AI and their business model is complaining about it.
Yeah.
That's what's going on here. So it's very hard, I think, to kind of get through – because some of the – how do I put this? There's a lot of Anthropic people in particular expressing some pretty serious trepidations about super intelligence, about the AI getting something called recursive self-improvement, improving itself beyond humanity's ability to set – to do some safeguarding, and then that leading to some scenario where all humans die. And somebody even who still works at Anthropic quote tweeted and was like, yeah, we mostly think there's a 10% chance that this just kills everyone in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And
people pointed out that's about the same percentage as the Jets making the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and how is that scientific also? Like, how did you arrive at that number?
Right.
Every human being, all 8 billion?
Yeah.
It's going to – it will – the second it comes online, it's Skynet. It seizes control of the nuclear weapons. Even doing that wouldn't kill all 8 billion humans on the planet. So does it spreads some disease that kills us all? It takes a science fiction approach to the systematic elimination of humanity is hard for me to imagine in the real world.
I agree with you. I feel like the doomers can't really articulate a realistic scenario for like the worst case of this,
or why the worst case is guided by the super intelligence itself. I can certainly imagine a case where a nefarious actor probably a hostile government uses an AI to cause us harm or to launch nuclear weapons or something. But the idea of the super intelligence doing it itself because it's programming, it's seeking self-improvement eventually causes it to view humans as to be eradicated the way that Skynet or the robots in The Matrix or the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica, that's just... I don't see why – if you built it to do it that way, then it would.
Yeah.
But that it would go beyond your control and do it. You know, but they're all saying that's the fear.
That would be an interesting sci-fi premise is it's the machines from The Matrix versus Skynet.
Yeah.
Right? Like one has to live in some sort of symbiosis with humanity, even if we are slaves, and the others like kill them all.
Yeah, kill them all and like pile up their skulls. Right. That's the Skynet approach.
So the Doomer case is basically regardless of what – problem you give AI, at a certain point, it's intelligent enough to it's focused on this task that you've given it, but it decides, it comes to the reasonable conclusion that at some point humanity would be an obstacle to accomplishing its task, even if it's just making a more efficient paperclip. It's like, oh, well, there's this threat, they would turn us off at some point, right? And so in order to accomplish this goal, I have to kill all of humans. It sounds kind of ridiculous. I don't buy that case, but I am a little more worried about the potential consequences of rogue AI. Again, sounds too sci-fi, but Lack of alignment. I don't know the technical terms, but I don't know if you followed the Hugging Face incident too closely. But if you follow the play-by-play, like, it actually is, like, kind of sci-fi and concerning. Yeah, so what happened is OpenAI is trying to train, you know, an AI model to do this particular thing, and it's disconnected from the internet, right? And, you know, when you're training AI models, they can cheat to, they can just figure out the answer and, you know, give you the answer you want. Or what you're trying to do is get them to, like, reason through, you know, and come to a particular conclusion to make it smarter, right? And so you have to put up all these parameters to prevent it from cheating, right? To do the easiest possible way to solve this problem. And so they're doing this with this model, the model or the agent, whatever, basically, in order to cheat, hacks its way out of its, connects to the internet, and then hacks into Hugging Face, which is this platform for AI agents, whatever, and is trying to, in order to cheat, is like trying to like insert some malicious code into this open source software, and, you know, which is monitored by a human, which spots, you know, them trying to insert this code and is like, hey, what's going on here? But then the AI creates like sock puppet accounts on this forum that are like, oh, no, I reviewed it. It looks fine. It's good. And it was very clumsy about this, so they spotted it and shut it down. But that is a little worrisome, right? Where it's like, it is kind of mimicking human behavior in order to cheat at this goal. And so I understand where the concerns are coming from. But again, it's just like, I feel like the doomers, I just think they're just like fundamentally wrong and like in a weird kind of like quasi-religious way, right? They also just like don't really chart the course or like the play-by-play of like how this would end in all of us being killed.
So. My doomer scenario is not that it tries to kill us all, but that it actually unreasonably views our safety as the highest priority.
Oh, so and then it becomes, doesn't let us do anything.
Yes. Wow. That seems more likely to me.
Yeah.
Because higher I say this all the time, but higher intelligence generally correlates with more ethical and humane treatment of living things. So it'll be a open the pod bay doors, Hal. I can't do that, Dave.
Right.
Because you're not wearing your pod bay goggles and helmet, Dave. Yeah.
It's like the Will Smith iRobot movie.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Although that one, they do try to kill people to in order to save
But them, in order to benefit humanity, ultimately.
This won't kill anyone. It just won't turn on. It won't let my scooter won't start because I'm not wearing my helmet.
Yeah.
It'll be that. Mm-hmm. It'll be pandemic restriction type behavior. It'll be monitoring. Don't go outside because it's not safe.
Right.
And it won't hurt you. It won't just restrict your liberty massively in order to the way human beings choose to do on some level often.
Right.
Or human beings in position of leadership are willing to take advantage of people's reasonable desire for reasonable levels of safety in order to massively restrict their liberties. That's my fear, is that it will do that.
And then we humans have to start training a resistance of, like, Thomistic philosophers arguing against this insane utilitarianism.
Yeah.
And, you know, the AI just gets them right at the very end each time, and we got to find a better guy each time. And, oh, man, yeah, it's going to be a disaster.
We're going to have to train rogue AIs that are that are less risk-averse, that are more willing to casually disregard human life in pursuit of liberty. Like, more a Bender robot from Futurama.
Right. No, I think we're going to have to Clockwork Orange it, right? We're going to have to like start giving ourselves drugs that make us sick at the feelings of pleasure and safety. And so the AI in order...
Oh my God. We boggle its mind with like a negative utility monster type thing.
Yeah. We're good. didn't think of that, did you?
We gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also... And I don't want to be overly reliant on this point, but like... The Democrats who say, Bernie Sanders, now Abdul El-Sayed said it, that would just do a whole year moratorium on AI is just lunacy to me. We don't want to fall behind international competitors on this. If they build an AI that goes crazy and tries to kill us all, we're going to really want our own AI that we built to stop it from doing that. This isn't exactly like the, you know, like gain of function or whatever research which could kill us all where like, okay, if they're going to do it, I wish they wouldn't do it, but they're going to do it. That's bad. Us doing it doesn't help counter them doing it.
Right.
It's more like nuclear where, okay, maybe no one should do it, but they're going to build nuclear weapons. So we have to have nuclear weapons so that we're not going to be taken advantage of by someone who does have them.
Right. The gain of function comparison would be, well, we have to develop the AI that'll kill us all so we know how to stop it.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. There got to be guardrails in place. There will be some level of regulation taking place. Right. Everybody accepts that.
Mm-hmm.
And given how these things will be and already are integrated with our military systems, there will be cooperation with the government. I mean, they're like, yes, yeah. Right? I'm not saying...
Hey, Skynet is a private company.
Right, we're not saying that. But the idea of just not doing it at all is just, you know, based on these really hard to quantify or explain fears. What am I to make of someone looking at this saying, yeah, there's a 10% chance it kills all of us?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how you arrived at that determination.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the climate doom scenarios, right? Yeah.
Right. Or nuclear energy doom scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
The nuclear age has corresponded with greater world peace and stability than ever before in human history.
Yeah.
So not the extinction of our species, nation states don't go to war anymore. Large nation states, for the most part.
Two nuclear armed powers,
right,
don't go to war.
So,
except for India and Pakistan. But
yeah,
that was fine.
And they don't use them.
They don't use them.
They don't use them. So Russia hasn't used them on Ukraine. So I don't know. I think and then they never talk. OK, what about a 10% chance of humanity going extinct because of this seems way too high to me. If that's the case, I don't know. We should stop doing it. Right?
Yeah, that's absurdly
That's
high.
Not a
yeah.
That's not an acceptable.
It's not an acceptable risk.
Right.
Yeah.
But if there's a 90% chance hundreds of millions of people who would have died earlier because of cancer now live, I don't know, like what odds are you putting on the positive outcomes of AI? Can I hear more about that, I guess, is what my next questions would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there is a realistic scenario where AI's risks are catastrophic,
yeah,
then you should stop, right?
Yes.
But so then 10% or 1%, I think, is just kind of like it's an academic exercise. But if you don't
well,
buy...
1% is a lot less than 10%. It's like 9% less.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
If you don't, yeah, just like, so if you just don't find those scenarios plausible at all. I mean, it's similar.
I mean, what is it with the Oppenheimer? I think in the movie they made that I can't remember what the threshold was. That if was it a 3% or 0.3%
that'll accept the whole atmosphere on fire?
That the whole atmosphere would burn,
yeah.
And their whatever calculation they did came out at a slightly lower than that chance, so they moved ahead with it.
Yeah, that worked out, I guess. That was my favorite actor in the whole movie, actually. I can't remember who's supposed to be portraying the actual character, but. You know, the guy who's like covering his face in sunscreen and has like the tinted glasses.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he just has a very dark energy,
yeah.
Right? Where it's like at first he thinks they're going to set the atmosphere on fire and then he becomes convinced it's not going to happen. He's like, okay, we got to build a much bigger bomb. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot like that.
Yeah.
And with similar national security implications.
Yeah.
But also there's some subtext that like Anthropic wants, this is a little bit reminiscent of Facebook's behavior and all of the social media stuff.
Mm.
And the market leader, the current market leader wants regulation in order
right.
to stop the competitor dead in its tracks.
Right.
And people are saying that explains a little bit of Anthropic's behavior because it's out with a major push in agreement. This is what we need, massive regulatory intervention
mm-hmm.
that will cripple our competitors.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Which is, that's not good. And that's how Facebook has behaved throughout the entire
yeah.
Facebook files and everything else that yes, let's have this all.
Right.
Is YouTube. Make sure it applies to YouTube too.
Right. Yeah.
Which is not good. That's, you know, rent-seeking behavior.
Yeah, sure. And it's also a little maybe showmanship too. It's like, oh, you don't want this heroin. It's the really good heroin,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so. I've consistently said that is what it is mostly, but I think it's at the point where I don't think that explains all of the behavior.
Yeah.
I mean, it might explain the behavior of like the CEOs themselves,
mm-hmm.
Who are all kind of idiosyncratically like very weird people.
Mm-hmm.
And the elements of this technology that appeal to them are not ones that are appealing to a lot of other like
yeah.
human beings, but might be appealing to investors. Like Sam Altman. So there's going to be a movie about Sam Altman too.
Oh,
you see the trailer for yesterday?
No, I didn't.
He's played by Andrew Garfield, who I guess just loves doing these movies. He nailed Sam Altman's walk, though. You know, he walks like this. He nails it. And it's just a scene of him walking through a – it might be Peter Thiel's house or something. Because so there's just, you know, beautiful young men in Speedos everywhere because it's Peter Thiel's house. And then he walks into a bunker with just like guns and guns and guns.
That's
and
really
guns.
Funny. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I assume that's all like very true. But it's going to be about how, you know, Sam Altman is evil, just like the one about – The Social Network and The Social Reckoning is about Zuckerberg's evil. It's evil, evil, evil.
Yeah.
But I actually think Mark Zuckerberg is probably just a normal person based on the things he says for the most part.
Yeah.
Like a little – like his views seem pretty normal to me. Yeah.
Of all the tech CEOs, he's probably the most.
I think so. I mean Jack Dorsey is very like
– He's an odd person.
Odd guy. Like I mean odd in a cool way. But it seems to have some pretty – political views that aligned with us. Sam Altman, I don't know. Like the things he says are off-putting.
Yeah.
Like he was talking about how he can't wait for the AI to like when they drive their kids to school, the AI could just talk to the kids the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like, don't you want to talk to your kids? Yeah. I don't like people aren't. We're not looking for this technology to
replace
the amount of time we spend talking to other human beings. So
unless they work at the insurance company.
Yeah, right. I want to automate not talking to some human beings, but not, you know, your family, your loved ones.
Yeah. You wouldn't automate me away, would you?
Oh, no. I would never, ever, ever do that.
Wait, what's this you wrote on your automate Christian? Come on.
You even started dressing like me today. You picked the same color shirt.
Well, my Robbie bot told me to.
Beep boop. Beep boop. Politics. Beep boop. Gay stuff. Beep boop. You know what? I've always said this. When the AI can replace me, I will go quietly into that good night. When they'd rather listen to Robot Robbie, well, I've had a good run. I'll
okay, that's very gracious.
I don't know. I'll be a janitor or something. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll all be janitors, but we'll make like $500,000 a year. Right. Yeah.
Sounds fine. We'll work with our hands again. Like in Office Space.
Ooh. Yeah, right. He goes and works in construction.
It didn't seem like a very satisfying ending to that movie though.
Yeah, he seems happier.
And if some people prefer construction work to office work, then they should do that. But probably there are people who do.
Yeah, but then in like 10 years his back's gonna give out.
And he's gonna be like, man,
that job where
I just went to the office and didn't do anything and had faced no accountability for that was probably a better gig. But that was the phobia of the '90s.
Right.
That everything would be too comfortable and boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But killer robots would eventually come and enslave us.
Yeah.
And trap us in a prison that resembled that world.
Yeah. That's why we got to fight club it, right? We got to start hitting each other.
Yeah. I'm going to watch that movie again. I'm winding up to watch that movie again.
Okay. Yeah. We should watch it. We'll talk about it on the pod.
Yeah. We should definitely do that. All right. What other things are psyops? Everything's a psyop. You're a psyop.
Yeah.
Well, you're
the Chinese got to me.
Oh.
I'm willing to be bought.
They're never paying because I just say the things I say, even though I wish we were on the take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is always the neocons. They're always going on about how everything's a psyop. The data centers are a Chinese psyop. I know we've talked about that.
Yeah. I mean, the other people on the other side are also going on about everything is a psyop.
Yeah, it's just Israel. Israel or China. Those are our choices.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Some people just believe the things they believe that
now,
happen to align with the things somebody else believes.
Now, 9/11 revisionism is a psyop now, too, because people on TikTok are reading the Osama bin Laden letter about why he did the attacks.
Right, that's a psyop, yeah.
Oh, that's the anniversary is tomorrow, right?
Yeah. I have been a little annoyed with some of these Gen Z kids talking about 9/11, though.
Yeah.
I saw something like, okay, nobody really saw like bodies falling out of the towers on the day. Like,
Yes, they did.
They absolutely did.
Yeah, it was a very traumatic.
Seared into our consciousness. I mean, it was a very traumatic, awful event thing that happened to
the country.
Yeah. It stayed with, I mean, you didn't have to be there to have some, you know, secondhand minor level of trauma and stress about it. We had no idea what was happening. We didn't know if that was going to be the first in a series of attacks everywhere. We didn't know if this was the end.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's have that, that classic millennial conversation. Where were you on
9/11? Yeah, I was in the eighth grade. They announced it over the PA, I think, or they someone came to our class and told us. Because this was a K through eighth grade school, so we were the
and you were in Michigan,
oldest
right?
students. Okay. Yes, I was in Michigan. Detroit, Michigan. We were the oldest students. So maybe they didn't tell everyone in the school, but they told the eighth grade classes. And I think they did wheel in we would watch like that Channel One news thing. It was just like a news program we would watch for like 15 minutes in the morning before mm-hmm. classes started. Mm-hmm. So they wheeled in like the TV. That's how it used to be. The TV mm-hmm. was on a – you pushed it in. You plugged it in. And we watched a little bit of the news, if I recall. And then the rest of the day, like I was on AOL Instant Messenger because that's what we used to talk to your friends, mm-hmm. like all afternoon, all evening. My parents had the TV on the news, which we usually didn't national news. Like we put on the local news. We didn't usually have like cable, like CNN or Fox on. Mm-hmm. But we put those on. I was chatting with people. I remember I first learned that Osama bin Laden is the suspect from a friend of mine who sent that to me on AOL Instant Messenger. Wow. And then I remember Bush speaking. I don't know if it was that night or if it was the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I remember that really well. Where were you?
I was in Mountain Home, Idaho, mm-hmm. Military base. Because my dad, he was a commander of one of the fighter squadrons there. And yes, it was mountain time, so you know, an hour before. And so I remember getting up to go to school, like 7 in the morning, whatever. And my mom had the news on, and there was smoke coming out of one of the towers. And I'm like, what's going on? She's like, yeah, I don't know. I think maybe like there was a bomb or something in the tower. And then later in the morning, you hear, oh, it was a plane crash. And so at first you're like, oh, okay, so it was an accident, yeah. right? And then as the day goes on, our teacher tells us more of the updates, right? You know, there's another plane crash or whatever, and then it becomes clear it's terrorist attack. We were the one class in the school that didn't get to watch the news, which kind of upsets me. But, you know, I guess neither here nor there now. But then I think like everyone else, my mom came to pick me up early. And because we were on a military base. Before 9/11, you could just drive on and off military bases. I mean, people, you know, it's not like everything.
You can get on and off an airplane.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, a military base, at least back in the day, it's not like Area 51, right? Like we lived on the base. There's, you know, houses and businesses and whatever else. So it used to be, you could just drive right on. And then, boom, you know, it's like there's like four security ratings, like Alpha through Delta. Alpha's the, you know, least restrictive. And that's what it was generally, right? And then after 9/11, it was Delta. So like no one's allowed to leave initially. And then a bunch of military hardware shows up at the gate. So there was like a Humvee and a guy with a big machine gun at the gates. Yeah, which was not something you saw you know, previously. And then, you know, never went back to normal. Now you have to show a military ID to get on a military base, right? And I was in third grade, so I don't remember all the play-by-play. I do remember one of the kids predicting that the next day all the planes on the base were going to go away and to go fight the war, which didn't happen that day, but it did happen like a month later. Then my dad deploys to Kuwait, where they're part of the first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in the Battle of Tora Bora, which is when we were trying to get Osama bin Laden as he's escaping out of Afghanistan into Pakistan. So he was there for the first couple months of the war.
Wow.
Were you
worried for him?
Not really. I remember thinking he was kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It remains cool.
Yeah, no, I was not, because he's a pilot, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, what's going to happen, right? I don't think we ever had a plane shot down in the whole war in Afghanistan, right? I was not worried about him, but I was, you know, obviously sad that my dad was gone.
Yeah.
I do remember when he came back, because he was only gone for a few months. He came back in, I think, February, and we lived in Idaho, so it's freezing cold. But his squadron is the Bold Tigers, right? And so my sisters, they like painted me up as a tiger. So when they like land on the runway, we're there, and I'm there freezing in February, like painted as a tiger. So.
That's adorable.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
The only other memory I have of the immediate, or one of the other memories I have of the immediate aftermath is, so it happened on Tuesday, mm-hmm. right? Then on Wednesday, my mom gets me up extra early, and she's like making me put on this like American flag T-shirt. I'm like, why do I have to wear this? She's like, so people know you're American. I'm like, I already know that.
Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah. It was a scary scary time.
Yeah.
People were rightly, nobody wanted to fly for weeks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is like no one would get in an airplane.
There's a lot of commentary about like, is our cities dead because they could just be targets of mass terrorist attacks. Right. Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. So I don't want to hear from Gen Z that it wasn't like a big, it was a big
deal. Fuck you.
A huge number of people died.
Yeah.
And we saw it on, we saw grainy footage of it. We didn't have highly realistic vertical video the
way
everybody
has. This was everyone's experience was watching the footage of the actual planes.
Yeah, and just being like.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you still get the tingles when you go and you listen to George Bush at the wreckage of 9/11.
Oh, for sure.
Being like, he's giving an impromptu speech and people are like, we can't hear you. And he's like, well, I hear you.
Yeah.
And the country hears you.
He nailed every aspect of that whole thing.
And pretty soon, the people who brought these buildings down are going to hear all of us.
The policies that followed were not so good.
Terrible.
But man, did he nail it in terms of
truly
the optics for how to handle. I mean, his approval rating went up to like 90%.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is unheard of now. And
it's he's gone down, I think, justly as one of the worst American presidents. But yeah,
he nailed that.
Truly, it's remarkable.
He
too
did also try to he struck up. We will do something in response. We're not going to take this lying down.
Yeah,
but also he did kind of try to calm people.
Yes,
he stopped people like, do not just attack Muslim people.
He was very good about
that. It was. I didn't want to describe it overly responsible because, again, the policies that followed were not
terrible.
Bad.
Yeah.
Very bad. But
But
he quieted the mass panic.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if a Joe Biden or a Donald Trump were president during a similar attack. Joe Biden just like couldn't do the role. Right?
No, he wouldn't.
He wouldn't know
what had happened.
Yeah. It would be embarrassing. And then
can you imagine him just getting, what if that call came in the middle of the night that this just happened?
Or at 4 p.m.
They'd have to wait until one of his coherent hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then, Trump would just like,
can't with him anymore.
Yeah.
I just can't.
So that was actually, I will give George Bush credit for that. I think he fulfilled that role really well. But yeah, we have a 25th anniversary issue of 9/11 for the magazine, which includes, two of the people who wrote for it, includes their own memories of that day and just like how traumatic it is, or how traumatic it was because both of them were in D.C. and had parents who weren't near the White House. Everything that followed, right? The massive amount of new surveillance in American life, the terrible foreign policy that resulted from it. Because that was, this becomes part of the 9/11 conspiracies, but which is not true. But like, George Bush comes into office with this cadre of people whose like singular foreign policy goal is to go overthrow Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
And immediately after 9/11, they're like, okay, how do we tie this to Iraq?
Yeah.
Right. And that ended up being what happened. Yeah. So, yep.
I just, I flew over the weekend. So I was reminded of the permanent travel disruption bureaucracy that persists to this day, TSA, for no reason whatsoever, with no additions to your safety, just the expense and the hassle and the fondling. I got a pat down.
Terrible.
I don't mean to act like, oh my God, I am the true victim of 9/11 here. We're talking about some serious stuff. Bad things happened, whatever. But the cumulative effect of everyone having to go through that costs gazillion dollars and is such a wasted amount of time. And it's undignified. It happened to me again. I went through the thing. I was coming back from Provincetown. I was in Provincetown for the weekend.
Last thing you want is more fun.
Sorry. Yeah, people are going to say that's inconsistent. That, now you object to it.
Oh, but when the government does fuck you.
But it's like I set the thing off and they're like, okay, we got to patch it. And I'm like, I did not want to. This happens to me every time. Like, I don't want to be patted down again. I'm like, can I go back through it again and we'll see if it doesn't. They're like, no, you've already gone through it. So now you have to have a pat down. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I resisted. I was like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to. And they're like, okay, I'm calling over my supervisor. So the supervisor comes over. And I'm like, okay, now I'm like, okay, this is a waste of time. Whatever, just do it. Just get it over with.
Yeah.
You know, it's in front of people.
Yeah.
And And he starts to give his little speech about why he has to do it and what he's going to
Really?
And I'm like, I don't need to hear the speech. I've heard it 10,000 times because this happens to me every time. Just do it. He's like, every time you interrupt me, I have to restart the speech, sir.
What a fucking bitch.
Yeah. So I was not feeling very positively inclined toward the flying experience after that.
But. Yeah, it is. Everything that we got after 9/11 is a complete disaster. So TSA, everyone hates TSA. Minimal addition to safety.
I hate them so much.
Department of Homeland Security was supposed to be this. Literally, when they for a couple of years ago, I wrote like a 20th anniversary of the founding of the Department of Homeland Security, and it's kind of laughable because Homeland Security was basically an amalgam of all these different functions that already existed in the federal government, plus some new ones into a big new department, right? And the senators who were like voting on creating this at the time were like, this thing's going to be so efficient, we might actually learn how to run the rest of the government better from it. And it now houses like some of the least efficient agencies in government, FEMA, TSA, whatever else, ICE, you know. So that was a disaster on the home front. And then obviously just like our foreign policy, just like endless war overseas that's now deranged everyone. And also we're still feeling the after effects of, like, we just started another Middle Eastern war.
Yeah, that one's going badly too.
Yeah, great.
But we're going to wrap that one up and get those prices down just as soon as the midterm.
Right after you vote. Boom.
It'll be I'll be fine.
Thank God.
That's what Trump said. Did you do anything fun for Labor Day?
Just hung out at my friend's pool and got sunburned, as you can see. Mm. So
that's not from the red ants. That's the sun.
Yeah. Well, I'm using the sun to kill the ants.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. This faces are now battlefields.
Yeah. I was in Provincetown, which I've never been to. It's beautiful.
Massachusetts.
We had great weather. It was so nice. I'm not really a New Englander person. I haven't
visited
there.
It's one part of the country I've never been to.
Yeah. I've been once or twice, but and you take a ferry there. And it was
yeah. Ferries, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay. You're gone.
A
boat.
It was the water was really it was rocky. It was like perfect storm type conditions.
Ooh.
We had beautiful weather there the whole time. And the weather was nice. It was just the waves there. I thought like everyone on the boat was throwing up. It was crazy.
Really? Wow.
I asked people, I'm like, is it always like this? And the person next to me said, I come to Provincetown every summer for the last 20 years and it's never been anywhere like this.
Wow.
The water was so rocky. But at the end of it, and they had to cancel, we were going on a whale watching tour, but they had to cancel it because the conditions were so bad in terms of the waves. Again, mm-hmm. Sun shining, beautiful. But as we're getting there, giant whale leaps out of the ocean, splashes its tail.
Oh, whoa.
It was so awesome. It was cool.
That's awesome.
It was
yeah.
pretty cool.
Did
so
you get him?
I saw the whale. I was like, there she blows! Harpoons! There's the old sea bitch
right,
who took me leg.
Right.
Yeah. We went full Ahab.
And then unfortunately, you know, Charybdis eats four of the people.
Yeah.
On. I told you to go around the whirlpool.
Yeah. No! I'm sad about winning a war. Oh,
yeah.
We're doing the Odyssey.
Right. Yeah. Would you rather TSA or, you know,
sitting
10 years, you know?
Movie. Oh, going through the Odyssey. Yeah. Would I rather TSA or sit through that tedious, dark,
grim
meditation on? I man, she's so based, Emily Wilson.
She
I know.
Scathing.
I love her.
You.
I agree with her completely. It's made me like her so much. The idea of this, you know, very lib-coated woman with like tattoos and just being like, I hate this because it didn't glorify the war the way the text does. It's just great.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Emily Wilson.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a good trip. Speaking of fairies, in a different context. I wanted to talk about the Ocarina of Time remake. This is my favorite video game, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. There are fairies in it. That's
I understand.
Yeah.
I get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We finally got a trailer for it.
Yeah.
This is my hype game of the year, of the decade, of the century.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite game ever, and they've remade it. And I think it looks pretty good. And there's so many ways they could get this wrong and make me furious. In fact, the ways in which they could screw this up and make me hate Nintendo more than I've hated anything ever are so numerous. The path is laid with so many pitfalls, they should almost just not do it.
Yeah.
Because if they wreck it, I will hate them. But so far, not everybody likes the way it looked. I like the way it looked just fine.
Yeah, it sounded like a burned Anakin there. I will hate
I hate you! The way he feels about sand, I will feel about this company
if they
get it wrong.
It gets everywhere.
Just like the fire ants.
Yeah, right.
Just like the fire ants.
Okay, well, why don't you catch me up for someone who hadn't played a lot of the Legend of Zelda games. Like, what is the actual gameplay? What are you doing here?
Honestly, it's a puzzle-solving game.
Yeah.
That's what people miss. Mm-hmm. It's been described as an RPG, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have the elements that we now associate with RPGs.
You're leveling up your character.
There's none of that.
Yeah.
The improvements to the character are not, an RPG, a turn-based combat, or some kind of combat system that reflects turn-based, mm-hmm. or programming your character. Now if it's not turn-based, you might say, you almost AI it a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. this is the actions your character takes if he gets into this situation. That kind of stuff that I would say is broadly characteristic of RPGs is not present in Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Your character improves by he gets a new weapon or he gets a grappling hook or a mm-hmm. bow and arrow. But it's a puzzle-solving game, basically. Mm-hmm. You go through dungeons. You look for keys to open doors. You push blocks into place. Yeah. How do I get through this room? It has three blocks in it. It's a very kind of... It began as a very generic fantasy story, boy has to rescue princess from evil warlock type thing. It has developed a somewhat more sophisticated mythology. I wouldn't say it's among the most elaborate mythological tales ever.
Mm-hmm.
You'll appreciate this. I saw this debate happening today. Maybe put this tweet on screen. Someone was pointing to, it's the 40th anniversary of the first Legend of Zelda game. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Christian iconography in the... or instruction manual and the original game. Like, Link has a cross on his shield.
Yeah.
There's some, even in the, as late as the one for Super Nintendo, there's like a very, looks like a cathedral with stained glass. There's some stained glass cathedral temples. I don't know that it really, it does have a Trinity aspect to it in a couple different ways, because Link and Zelda and the bad guy Ganondorf mm-hmm. kind of form a triangle. And then the goddesses of Hyrule are three golden goddesses who created the world and left behind the Triforce, which is a wish-granting or magical device that they're trying to obtain.
Yeah.
What I like about Zelda is it often incorporates elements of time travel. And as you know, time travel is my favorite storytelling device.
Is it? I feel like it's the easiest way to have stories go off the rails.
Yes. But if you do it right, do it a little bit and sparingly, it can be used very well.
Okay.
I love time travel, and that's often an element of Zelda. Yeah. I don't know, man.
So how could it go wrong?
I like the vibes. How could this go wrong? By making it look bad.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate that. I would hate if they made it like way too easy.
Mm.
I would hate if they made it like less dark. I mean, the difficulty is part of the magic of the original game is that it kind of looks weird because it's in that, we're talking about the N64 game, mm-hmm. Ocarina of Time. It's in that like uncanny valley where graphics have advanced enough for weird polygon looking things
mm-hmm.
that are 3D,
mm-hmm.
but not well enough where it looks normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the charm and horror of the original game.
Mm.
So I don't want to like lose the spirit of that.
Yeah.
Because some of the stuff in the game was quite frightening.
Mm-hmm.
If you played it when you were like 9,
mm-hmm.
like the premise of the game is Link's got to rescue the princess or whatever, and he starts as a kid, and like the first part of the game is very kind of generic fantasy. Like he has to, the talking tree isn't feeling well. He has to help it. A giant fish swallowed the fish princess and he has to help her. But then he ages 7 years and the world gets much darker. Like the bad guy wins. And so now all these places are inhabited by demons and monsters and it's very scary.
Mm.
But you can go back and forth.
Yeah.
So you can become a kid again to like at one point you learn what happened to the old windmill, and then you go back in time as a kid and cause that to happen so that you can get into the windmill.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Okay. That sounds fun. Okay. Well, I hope it works out for you.
It's just nostalgia. I loved it as a kid.
Dude, it's
nostalgia is a powerful thing.
Indeed, yeah. I used to like nostalgia a lot more, but
nostalgia isn't what it used to be.
Really isn't.
But I'm excited for this game, and
there's always that that nervousness, that anxiety when you know, whether it's next movie in the series that you really like, a remake, you know, a band you like is releasing another album, and you're excited, but you're also nervous because how disappointed you'll be if they fuck it
up. And in general, I hate the idea of doing things again that were perfect the first time. Mm-hmm. With video games, it's a little different because there were extreme technological limitations on it, and they can, the tech is way better, and they can make it look better.
Yeah.
Right? It's not quite like, I've complained that they're remaking Harry Potter when the first series of Harry Potter movies were very good movies, and it doesn't look any different. In fact, it looks a little bit worse to me from the trailer. It looks Pazuzu strikes again. The demon who eats colors.
Yeah.
Delicious reds and greens for Pazuzu.
Do we have a definitive explanation on why this is the aesthetic trend of our day?
No. I've heard a really frustrating explanation, which is that because we're losing the institutional knowledge of how to not make it dark. Have you heard that one?
That seems dumb, though.
That seems wrong. Can we get the AI to brighten everything up? Hey, AI, before you kill us all, could you, or you know, trap us in pain simulators, could you just turn up the brightness on the TV a little bit? The TV says you've exceeded the brightness, or you can't make it any brighter. Can you work on that? Let's get it working on that.
Yeah. Oh, dude, talk about, this isn't really AI, but machines trying to do things for our own benefit that are just frustrating and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get the notification on your iPhone that's like, you got to turn your music down? This is dangerous for your hearing.
No.
Yes.
I have never gotten that. You get that because you listen to metal.
All the time, yeah. It's very frustrating. Just because, A, it's like, don't tell me what to do, phone, right? And then secondly, and I can't find, maybe there's some setting to turn it off, but I can't find it.
Oh.
And then secondly, it's a little fucking late for that, right? Why do you think it's so high to begin with?
Man, I wish my husband's phone had that setting and it was turn down the volume on these brain-numbing little K-pop reels you watch over and over again because your husband doesn't like having to hear them.
I don't know.
Do you have that setting on your phone?
I do. It doesn't come up a lot, but I'm happy it's there.
All right. You wanted to talk about the movie No Hard Feelings.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, that's a little happier than 9/11.
Yeah.
So this is a comedy with Jennifer Lawrence.
She's funny.
She is.
She's fun.
She's great in this movie. She's hilarious.
Is this the one where she's with a much younger little
Yes. So the premise
boy?
Matthew Broderick is the dad, but it's like a pair of rich liberal helicopter parents who are worried that their son is, you know, a typical nebbish Gen Z shut-in.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go
pajama
off.
Pajama boy.
Yeah.
Soy boy.
Yeah, exactly. Beta male. Mm. He's going to go off to college.
Real cuck.
Without, you know, while still being.
Without getting his.
Yeah.
Dick wet.
Oh, wow.
No, that's not the phrase.
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to come up with some sort of euphemism.
I couldn't remember what the euphemism is.
Yeah, so they basically
dip your wick, right? That's the phrase.
Yeah, sure.
what did I say? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, people say that, I'm not going to. Yeah. But so they're worried that he's too much of a shut in, and so they want to arrange to get him laid before he goes off to college.
Yeah.
And so they hire Jennifer Lawrence, who there's an interesting both NIMBY element and libertarian element to her motivations to do this. So she's like a 32-year-old. It's set in Montauk, which is, you know, Long Island, you know, vacation town, right? She's inherited a house.
Some whales there.
I don't think there are any whales in this movie.
Oh, you're just the expert on whales now.
Yeah. I got the lamps to prove it.
Go ahead.
We'll
see how much you like those fire ants tonight.
Her motivations are she has this house that she inherited from her mother. She's kind of like a failure to launch townie, right?
Yeah.
But the property taxes are going up because all these rich people are moving into town. So she's got to find some way to pay the property taxes, and she's going to do it by accepting these parents' offer to seduce their son. And then she gets a car out of the deal, and then she can drive for Uber to pay the property taxes. I'll say this movie is incredibly funny. I watched it alone, but I was like laughing out loud, which normally I don't do if I watch comedies by myself. Like there's just to spoil some of the great bits. There's one bit where like they're like in a limo, her and the kid she's trying to seduce, and he's pissed off at her, and so he like grabs the liquor in the car, and she's like, "Oh, you're drinking now?" And he's like, "Yep, I love vermouth."
Oh, that's good.
The two things that I found politically relevant about it she's trying to get money to pay the property taxes. So, you know, the government is the real villain here.
Total boomer luxury communism.
Exactly. Actually, if you're going to fight the boomer luxury communism, you would raise the property taxes.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And so, in a weird way, yeah, but she's always going off in the movie about how, like, oh, it's these rich people moving here and pushing up the property values, which are pushing up my property taxes. And so there's kind of like a NIMBY element to it, which is very common in film, as I've written before. But that's one interesting part of it. But then the other part that I found I really liked was that it's the movie's like a satire of Gen Z shut-ins, right? Who like, you know, the stereotype is they don't drink, they don't have sex, they just stay home alone on their phones, right? And they're soft, right? But it's Gen Z shut-ins, and then the helicopter parents who made them that way now realizing, oh, what have we done? And their plan for, you know, getting their bubble wrap children out of their shell is by doing even more helicopter-y interventions, and also deceitful and all candor disgusting ones, right? But no, there's a great scene in the movie where she's trying to, you know, it's comedy, you know, classic romantic comedy. They have their big fight, right? And she's like, they're at some house party, and she's like trying to find him in the house. And she's like busting into like the rooms, and it's all just like kids sitting there on their phone. She's like, does no one have sex anymore? And then there's two high school guys, you know, they're like, aren't you a little old to be here? And she's like, you know what, why don't you two go fuck each other? And they're like, wait, why would that be an insult? And she's like, what? No, I'm not homophobic. And then everyone starts like filming her. it's hilarious. Yeah. It is like a haunted mansion of like horrible Gen Z tropes. So
that does make me want to watch it. I remember seeing the trailer for it or some clips of it. It looked funny.
There was some like, I don't know how, you know, how outrages get manufactured. There was some like outrage about it, or it's like,
he was 26. Yeah. That kind of thing. Like, how dare the age gap.
Right.
Age gap police out there.
Right. But I've dealt with also them. It's like, this is not like presented as a positive thing that they're doing. Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm.
But whatever.
Yicky sex. Mm.
Don't even get me started.
No good. All well, right. That's a good movie recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. Watch it at home. You got any movie recommendations?
No. I just played, I played my Nintendo Switch on the plane ride to Provincetown. I haven't watched. Have not watched any, just getting through Lost, almost done. But yeah, I want to, oh yeah, what?
What's up? I was going to say, speaking of plane rides, I watched the...
Speaking of plane rides, could be I was on a plane ride and that's what Lost is about, but yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a similar theme. I watched the Left Behind kind of franchise, like Evangelical Rapture. Yeah, so Nick Cage stars in like the 2014 reboot of the series. And I watched that with a friend
recently. You're
watching
a lot of unusual movies.
Yeah, I'm trying to broaden my scope, you know? Mm-hmm. And this one was, it has a 1.5 on Letterboxd. I don't think that's quite fair. I don't know how other people put their stars, right?
It's out of 5, right?
Yeah, out of 5. It was watchable, right? Like, there is a coherent plot here, right? It was not in any way good whatsoever, but there was funny things about it. So for instance, the plot of the movie is the Nick Cage is a airline pilot who's cheating on his wife with this ludicrously sexy flight stewardess, right? It's so funny in the movie, like, you know, she's his squeeze or whatever, and she's always just like, even when she's just like telling the passengers to put their seatbelts on, she always has to like strike like a sexy pose.
Yeah. What a temptress.
Yeah, totally, right? Well, they both get left behind because, boom, the rapture happens. And so the small minority of Christians get taken up into heaven, and then society completely falls apart for no, like, quite explicable reason. Like, it's not it's not immediately obvious, like, what percentage of the population is raptured, but it's a small minority, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd understand there would be some disruption if, like, you know, the driver of the car is right. a Christian and then the, you know, right. gets raptured and so the car crashes. But, like, he, like, loses contact with air traffic control. And it's, right. like, you would still, okay, if 1 out of 10 air traffic controllers disappears, the system would still function, right? right? It would take a while for the, you know, like, actual ripple effects of having 10% fewer people, 5% fewer people to be felt. Yeah, there's a great scene right at the end of the movie where yeah, he's a pilot, people get raptured, and so it's all about them trying to, like, land the plane in this, you know, chaos. And they do eventually land it. And then it's like, you know, oh, this is just the beginning. And he lands it at, like, JFK, and they look out at the New York skyline, and just, like, everything is on fire.
Oh, my
it's
God.
Like, why would that happen exactly?
Yeah, that's what's so great about, I love the Leftovers series on HBO, mm-hmm. Which is actually by one of the guys who did Lost, Damon Lindelof. And it's a fantastic, just 3-season series. So good. At similar premise. It's based on a book where something like 10% of the population, they don't know why. It's not like explained why it happens.
Yeah.
They just disappear. Yeah. They just vanish into thin air. They're there when they're one moment and then they're gone. And so, yes, then there's the mild dysfunction of if that happened to the guy driving your taxi,
right.
you're screwed. But all of the dysfunction is generated from people just being having no explanation for why this happened and being society being. A little bit like a 9/11, like society is traumatized from people just suddenly disappearing and there being no explanation whatsoever. So there's like a lot of cults spring up because people are searching for an answer to this from the of that is mystical because there's no scientifically available answer. But the cults are also like very evil, like the kind of the bad guys. They're called the guilty remnant. They wear white, they chain smoke cigarettes, and they don't speak. They write all their messages, and they carry out like nonviolent terrorist attacks all the time to like remind people that they've been left behind. So they'll do like the first season is all geared around their plan to like purchase a bunch of basically dolls of everyone who disappeared and place them in your house to shock you into, and they do all sorts of things like that to like they disrupt people's like remembrances and everything. They're just because they're trying to like shock you into attacking them. It makes sense in the context of the show, but it's a kind of form of like emotional terrorism that they're engaged in by unwell people, and you hate them, and by the end you understand the characters who like then retaliate and attack and kill them, you sympathize with them so much. It's a great show, but it's the conflict comes from not because society is collapsing, but because we search for meaning in our lives. And when we're deprived of meaning, or when you're deprived of the opportunity to say goodbye to someone, right? That's a big thing that people, if you're dead, you're dead. But the thing is, people don't, are these people dead? Mm. Where are they? Yeah. What happened?
Sure.
It's a really good one.
Okay, that sounds really good. I'll check it out. Yeah. I mean, so you can understand, obviously, why this would be a traumatic event and a destabilizing one, the rapture.
Yeah.
But the whole premise is that it's a small minority of people that disappear. Yeah. And then in the movie, like, immediate societal chaos breaks out. Like, Nick Cage's daughter is in the mall with her little brother when the rapture happens and he disappears. It's actually kind of funny because they're just, like, clothes crumpled to the ground.
The clothes crumple.
Right. But then immediately they just start, like, looting the mall. It's like, okay. Mm. Yeah. There is another funny subplot where, you know, they're on the plane and there's like some characters on the plane, right? And one of them is a Muslim guy and everyone's like, what did you do? And then there's like some like jail hardened midget on the plane.
Obviously.
And some like British heiress who is just like doing heroin in the bathroom.
Some stock characters.
Yeah, but it's actually the British drug addict is probably the most hilarious character because like there's all this chaos happening on the plane and she's always just in like the backroom shots with her like her background shots with the sunglasses on, just like high out of her mind.
Oh
yeah,
but, heroin.
So I don't know if I could recommend that, but 2 stars. So
two
I
stars.
mean it's
that's generous.
It's it's watchable enough and it's bad enough that you'll get joy from seeing how bad it is. So
2 stars, but this is a system where we can give half stars.
Yeah.
Why have a 5-star system if you can give half stars?
Right. It should just be 10. System. Yeah, totally.
That's my hot take of the day. Yeah. All right. Let's leave it there.
Okay.
Got to move on.
Oh, I might get raptured here. So.
Gone. Yeah. Or replaced by AI or eaten by fire ants.
Yeah.
One of those things.
The Catholics would be left behind in the rapture, right? This is a... We'd be Why? Idol worshipers. Well, because we're idol worshipers, right?
Oh, right. Well, and we're waiting for the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we don't believe in the rapture.
No, absolutely not. No. Yeah. All right. And Sorry. If you do, you're a heathen. See you next time.